Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. It's a rare privilege to be in a position to sit down and talk with someone who's experienced almost 100 years of life. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to part one of a three-part program featuring the life and the stories as told by Phyllis Smith. Phyllis turns 100 years of age in May of this year, and yet her spirit, strength and memories suggest that she could well have been 25 years or more younger. Born in 1912 in Tasmania, and into a period so unlike ours today, Phyllis has been keen to participate in the journey of life, with little time for just being a tourist. Due to circumstances that Phyllis enlarges upon, she spent much of her early life living with her grandparents, with whom she had a most wonderful and affectionate relationship. The cold reality of the world became part of her life when her mother, whom she loved dearly, remarried and took Phyllis back. Sadly, her stepfather did not display the same care and love, and in the end, Phyllis is forced to confront him. But this is later in life. She sets her story out in a way that entices us to want more, covering the Great Depression and how she went to work at 12 and a half years of age. Learn why and how she ends up working in Sydney. By the outbreak of World War II, she returns to Tasmania, becoming the first licensed female bus driver in that state. Humour, sadness, brashness, assertiveness, commitment and hard work and love. These all describe this wonderful woman, and here she is telling her story. Well, thank you for inviting me into your home, Phyllis. And could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born on the 7th of May 1912 in Hobart.
So you're just about a centurion, if that's the correct word.
100
years old, 5 months. And a letter from the Queen, I hope.
Oh, yes.
I have to say, Phyllis, you look incredibly healthy and well for somebody who's 99 and almost 100.
I don't even feel it.
Well, you don't look it.
And if my old back doesn't do what I want it to do.
You just seem to be so vital.
No, I like to be into everything.
I can see
I'm
that.
I'm out nearly every day.
Good for you. Can I ask you then, going back to you as a young girl, what's your earliest memories?
I think about 4 years old, I remember. My grandmother had a say. I lived with my grandparents because my father died and my mother had to work and there was no child endowment those days. And I went to live with Grandma when I was about 3 months old, I think. Grandma had an old say, she would always say, oh, those humbugs. And these people used to come, and Grandma said, those humbugs are coming again. And I got it all mixed up. I went in and said to Grandma, Grandma, those mumbuggers are coming. So I was told not, never to say that again. That was terrible. I didn't see why. I thought Grandma had said it. Anyway, she was Irish and my grandpa was Scotch.
Oh, that's so, quite a mixture.
Yeah.
Were they gentle people? Was it an explosive mixture?
Scottish, oh, gentle. Yeah, I never gentle. Heard. Oh, I lived with them until I was 8 and a half. My mother married again then and I had to go and live with her, but to my disgust. But I never heard a crossword between them. If they had to anything to discuss, it wouldn't be in front of me.
Mm.
I never heard an angry word. I never heard Grandpa say a bad word. Damn was a bad word. It was a shocking word. You do not say that, girl. That is disgusting. One of the other children, I'd heard them say it, so I said it too. You're disgusting. She said, don't ever say that again. And you had to go at night time. Grandpa and Grandma would sit on the couch and you knelt down in front of them and said your prayers. The first thing Grandpa would say, have you cleaned your head and your heart, girl? You mustn't go to bed with anything in your mind or in your heart. You had to go clear, to get up in the morning with a clear day. No matter what anyone had done to you, that was finished that night. When you went to bed, that was out.
Very wise man by the sound of it.
He was.
Because a lot of people seem to carry these things on, and you wonder often if that's what burdens their lives down.
When the sun goes down, everything's gone. The sun comes up in the morning, it's a new day.
Lovely piece of philosophy.
Yep.
Yes.
And I still do that. I have occasionally earlier got angry about something, but before I went to bed, I'd always say to God, I've finished it. No, it's out. I never carry on. had a lot of things done to me. I've been done out of money, thousands of dollars of money, but I don't hold a grudge. So.
I'd like to think that part of your reward for living such a wonderfully focused life is the fact that you are such a vital woman and you've got seem to be so healthy for your age. Maybe that's your reward for
healthy. So I can eat anything.
What do you remember about the home with Grandma and Granddad? What was the home like, the house like?
Oh, lovely. We had three bedrooms. My bedroom was only a little one, but there was another big bedroom for visitors and guests. Down to Venture Bay, we looked right out. There's a picture of Venture Bay up there, see? That's the beach.
Right.
But our house looked right out down there over the beach.
Wow.
And we get up and Grandpa would say about 10 or 11 o'clock, come on, Jack, we used to call me Jack, come on, Jack, we'll go and get our dinner. We'd go out in the boat and whatever we caught, we'd have.
Oh, from doesn't get much fresher than that.
Crayfish to perch or cod or barracuda, whatever. You don't catch barracuda with a hook, you catch it what you call a G. It's just a piece of wire up like that and sharpened, like to hook something on. Because you just give them a pull and it goes right through
them.
And you catch them.
Uh-huh.
And then one day we were out in the boat and Grandpa said, ever seen a rope with three ends, Jack? I said, I can't have three ends, Grandpa's got to have four or two. No, he said, this one's got three. I said, can't have three, Grandpa. He said, you watch, girl. He said, see that end? I said, yes. He said, see that end? I said, yes. He threw it over the boat and said, there's the other end.
He had a sense of humour as well.
Oh, yes, had a good sense of humour.
Grandma would have done most of the cooking, I assume.
Oh, she was a marvellous cook.
But in those days, you wouldn't have had any what we call modern conveniences. Was she cooking on a wood stove or what?
Wood stove.
Yes. Mm. How did she keep her food fresh?
Oh, we had the Coolgardie safe.
Ah, Coolgardie safe.
It's all got hessian all around it, and hessian going down into big tins of water. Keep it cool and keep ants or anything out of it, you know.
And did that work? Can you remember, did that work?
Oh, yes, I had one of those at Heelsville after I got married.
Right. Yeah. Goodness me, okay. Did you have any friends as a young girl?
Friends?
Hmm.
Oh, down on Bruny Island, yes, until I was nine, so I say. And then my stepfather was not a very nice man. He didn't think that I should, because my grandparents were, they weren't rich, but they weren't poor. They were middle class. And Grandma had all my clothes made. I had beautiful clothes and all my underwear was embroidered and everything, you know, and beautiful things. And Mother married him. I don't know why she married him. I think he was horrible. But anyway, she married him and she had a daughter about 12 months after. And he didn't think it was fair that I should be down there having the best of everything while his child couldn't have it. So he said I had to go up and live there. And he wouldn't let me take any of my good clothes.
Oh.
I believe more than my mum had to go and buy me some second-hand stuff out of the second-hand shop.
Did you understand as a young girl what was happening?
No. I said something to Grandpa. I said, I hate, he said, I don't like that word. My Grandpa is horrible. And he said, all right, my dear, but you don't use that word.
Mm.
He said, that's a devil's word.
Mm.
You don't use it. But he was a horrible man.
So it wasn't a pleasant life once you left Grandma and Granddad?
No, no. I ran away three times. The day she was getting married, you know, I said, Mum, your mother's getting married to that man. I said, to that man? Yes. So Grandma dressed me, lovely white dress and white shoes and everything. I had very light, almost white hair, pink bow in my hair. I'm not going to the wedding, I'm saying to myself. So people next door, Mr. Finnegan's their name, where their house at the back went right up high or big underneath it, you know. So Grandma put me on the couch. She said, sit there, dear, till I go and get dressed. So dear sat there for a while. Up I went under this house and I ended up crawling on it, rolling on my tummy right up under it. Beautiful white dress.
White dress.
I could hear them calling me. I never answered. And my auntie said, we'll have to go. We'll be late. We'll have to go, Mum. We'll have to go. So Grandma and her trotted off. After I thought they were well out, I ended out and went back and sat on the couch where I was sitting when they left me. When they came back, because I'm sitting there, cobwebs and bedding all over me. Grandma looked, what a girl. What a girl. I looked at her. What are you going to do, Grandma? I don't know, dear. I just don't, because I wasn't living at home then. I was still living with her, you see. Never mind, dear. We'll clear it all up. Don't worry. So, of course, my mother was so angry with me, she didn't even speak to me. I've seen there were cobwebs and everything all over me.
It must have been very difficult for your grandma because she obviously loved you a lot.
Yes.
And to see you having to go through this transformation must have been very stressful for her.
It was. She was very sick for a while, I'm sure. I realise now, I think it must have been, I didn't know it then, I thought, oh, yeah, she got sick, you know, but I realise now that it must have been a worry over me.
Of course.
Because I ran away three times and ran up to my auntie's and I ran away to a friend's place and I ran around trying to get on the boat to get back over the ferry to go back to Grandma's down South Bruni. I was going down there. Only they put the word out and when I got to the boat, I got down as far as the boat at Kettering and they got there and sent me back again. I had a horrible time with my stepfather.
With all that going on, did you manage to go to school?
Oh, yes. So I went to school, but I had to leave when I was 12 and a half because it was in the middle of a depression. And I had to go to work to help put some money in the house to keep... By that time, Mum had another daughter, two of them, and I had to... 7 and 6 a week I got.
Because those depression years were very bad, weren't they?
And we had three in Tasmania, but we only had two here.
Right.
We had three. And I went to this place, I was working... Two children, I had to look after them through the day their parents worked, and I'd cook a meal for their parents when they came home.
And you're only, what, 12, 13 years of age?
12 and a half.
That's a lot of responsibility.
So I never got much schooling.
No.
And then later on, I saved up money, got a better job as I got older, I saved up money, and I said to Mum one day, I'm going to Sydney. And she said, you're going to what? I said, I'm going to Sydney. Oh, you're not? I said, I've got my ticket. I don't know whether you ever heard of the old... I forget the name of the boat now. It was her last trip going to Sydney from Hobart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on it. Well, it didn't worry me, but there was hardly anyone up for a meal. You had to hold on to your plate, because I'd been used to the water all the time.
Of course. It didn't worry me. You were.
Because we had a dinghy, a motorboat, and a yacht. Grandpa used to race on the yachts on Boxing Day up in Tassie, and they always have races up the river. And we had a motorboat, and then we had the dinghy, so it didn't worry me.
Now, you had your sea legs from a little girl.
I was hanging on to my plate and eating, and someone said, how can you eat? Because I'm hungry. I got to Sydney, and I left my case. I said to the lady in the office, can I leave my case here? And she said, yes. Oh, in the first place, Mum said to me, have you got enough money? Oh, yes, I've got money. I had 2 and 6.
Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Phyllis Smith. And Phyllis, who's about to reach the remarkable age of 100, is recollecting stories from her early days. And this story is how she left home and went to Sydney with the grand sum of 2 and 6.
Now, that wasn't, of course, a tiny bit of money, but it wasn't enough to live on.
Well, 2 and 6, you couldn't get any.
That's right.
Anyway, I thought, I've got to get a job. So I trotted up the street, up Sydney, and got into one of the streets. I sort of waited for a policeman, because we all had faith in policemen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, can you tell me where there's an agency I want to get a job? And he said, oh, such a blah, blah, blah. And I said, are you going? I said, I don't know where it is. He said, what do you mean you don't know where it is? I said, well, I've just got off the boat from Hobart. I don't know where it is. Oh, come on. Well, he was stepping out and I'm running along the side of him. We get to the agents and she said, have you got any references? I said, yes, but they're in my case. She said, what do you mean in your case? I said, in my case down at the wharf. She said, what are you talking about, girl? Because I'm 19 at the time. What are you talking about, girl? I said, I've just come from Hobart. Oh, she said, on the phone to her. Oh, I've got a young lass here from Hobart, she said. Send her up straight away because we had a very good name for work. Hobart people.
Right.
All really, really good workers. So she said, go up to us. So I sat there and she said, where are you sitting there? I said, how do I get there? And she said, you have to go on the train. And I said, I haven't got any money. And she said, what? I said, I've only got 2 and 6. I've got to get my case from the other thing. I said, what? You came here with 2 and 6? I said, yes. So she called the girl into the office. She came, got her car, took me down, got my case, put me on the train, sent me up to Turramurra.
Wow.
Anyway, I get up there at Turramurra and this lady's waiting for me there. She only wanted me for 6 months. She was going to have a baby and she wanted someone to look after the other little fellow. Anyway, the time went on and went on and went on, went on. And they weren't very wealthy people. He had a job, but not a top-notch job. And after I was there about 6 months. The girl down the road said she was going to do a course at Tech, Ultimo Tech. Cooking in the morning and dressmaking in the afternoon. And I said to Mrs. Nutter, I said, could I have that day, the same day off as Iris? So I was like, she said, yeah, yes, so I went down and time went on and went on and went on. I did my 3 years there. I got my certificates for dressmaking and cooking both. And she said to me, look, I can't afford to pay you anymore. She said, you need more money. I said, oh, no, I'm all right. No, she said, you've got to earn more than this. She said, I can't afford it. So she looked around. She got me a place over, I forget the name of the place, there, over the other side of the city. So I said, I've got a funny feeling. I'm not going to take all my things. And she said, all right, come back any day, you know, and your day off. And so I said, yeah, all right. So I just took a case with a few things in, get down to this place. By the time I got there, it was around 8:30 in the night.
Oh, goodness.
My tummy's saying food.
Of course.
And I went in this Jewish woman, she was. That's your room there. And that's the kitchen out there. So, okay. But then I'd go out and get something to eat. Everything's padlocked. Refrigerator, cupboards, everything's got padlocks on it.
Goodness me.
I thought, oh, not this. And knock on the lounge room door. She said, yes. I said, well, the things are padlocked. She said, oh, yes. She said, I put out the food for the day. I said, well, I'm hungry now. She said, oh, you have to wait till morning. I said, I've got a couple of shillings. I said, can I use the phone, please? And she said, yes, sorry. She took the money.
Oh, gosh.
So I rang up Mrs. Utter. I said, I want to come home. She said, why? I told her, oh, my God. Oh, she said, come straight back. So next thing I did, ring a taxi. And I said, I haven't got any money for the fare. Well, she said, get on the train. She said, I'll meet you up at Tarramurra and I'll pay the fare at Tarramurra, which she did.
Oh.
It must have been about 11 or 12 o'clock by the time I got there.
What an adventure.
And my tummy's saying, food,
oh,
food.
Oh, there's nothing hungrier than a young person.
Because I've always liked my food. Anyway, we got home. I told her, oh, she said, oh, how could she do that to you, she said. So I said, well, I'll go there. So another 6 or 8 months went by, and then people made Cyclops toys. John, I forget the name, he and Christy were getting married, and they wanted someone to go in the house and be there when they came back and have food and everything in the house. So Mrs. Dutter said, well, she'll do it. She said, she's all right, she'll have everything ready for you. So I went into this lovely home in Clara, a big two-storey place, beautiful home, because I had it all ready when they came back and ordered all food, got everything in. So I stayed there for about 2 years, I think. Might have been quite 2 years. Anyway, Iris got in touch with me, and I went to tech with, and she said, how about we start a dressmaking business? I said, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. So she said, well, only make for brides and bridesmaids, you know. But we had a wonderful thing going. I left Mrs. Hines then, I left Hines, I said I was going. Oh, that's all right, they were quite happy. I left them, but we noticed I didn't walk out. They said, oh, you always come back and see us, you know. That was all right. Well, we had a really good business going. And I got, of course, there were no telephones those days. I got a telegram from home to say my mother was dying.
Oh.
So I said to Iris, I'm going home. So I best packed a case along. We had two machines. We had one big room was just full of dressmaking things, racks with things on and everything. We were doing really well. So away I go to Tassie. Of course, when I got back with Mum and the other girls, I didn't want to go away again then, so I wrote Iris and said, you know, you just have everything. Don't worry, because I'm not coming back. So I stayed over there then.
So can I just ask you then, so Mum did recover at that stage?
Oh, yes.
Was she still living with her husband?
She was.
Your stepfather, when you went back to Tasmania?
Yes.
But that wasn't enough to drive you away. You were quite happy staying there, even though he was still around.
Oh, well, I missed out the bad step with him. One night, her mother was away. We had a great aunt that was bedridden, and my auntie used to live with her. But the others used to take nights and let Auntie Ivy get out, you know, sometimes. So Mother used to go on this one night and stay till about 10 o'clock or something.
Mm.
And I was in bed and didn't have your room to yourself in those days. The two other girls,
of course.
There was three of us in the room, sort of. I was nearest the door. Nearly asleep, and I felt someone touch me. I jumped, and there he was with his hand under the bedclothes. And he said, oh, I said, get out. And he said, oh, no, come on, come on, come on. He said, I won't hurt you, I won't hurt you. I said, get out of my room, get away. I yell and wake the girls up. He said, no, don't do that. And so he went to touch me, and I scratched him right down the side of his face.
Oh, good for you.
Mother was always telling me about my long nails. So
yes.
And I scratched him right down the face.
Oh.
And Mother was blind. She liked me. She only had one eye. And anyway, the next morning, I got up early. I said to him, got up real early, and Mother had 3 or 4 of these little vegetable knives, you know, these little sharp knives. I got one of those, and I went out and I said, if you ever come near me, I'll stick this right through your eye.
He probably knew you meant it.
We knew I meant it.
Yes.
And he wouldn't even sit on it. He was sitting on the couch, and I came and sat there. He'd get up and walk away and sit somewhere else. Anyway, Mother said, oh, Wally, what did you do to your face? And he looked straight at me. And he said, oh, the cats were fighting, and I went out to stopped them, and I fell against the rose bush. Well, if Mum had had a brain working, she'd have seen the straight marks, but she just believed, oh, just patting his, bathing his face, and I thought,
Look, I've got to say, Phyllis, this is not an unusual situation. I've heard similar stories, and what I think often happens is that the partner doesn't want to see the truth. Your mum probably didn't want to see the truth because...
No, I think she really didn't. She really didn't, because she was a very trusting lady. And
right.
I think she... Because we did have a lot of rose bushes out there. And I could see the direct
marks. There's a big difference, isn't there? Oh, yes.
But,
so did that make it a little easier for you? That awful situation actually made it easier.
Never came near me. And he used to have a vegetable round.
Mm.
Got vegetables with plain tap around them. And I used to go around and help because I liked the horse, you know. Until that happened, I was quite happy to go around. I never really liked him, but I liked getting out with the horse, so I'd go out. And then I said, I didn't want to go anymore. Mother said, why don't you want to go?
Mm.
I wouldn't call him Dad, I'd call him Da. She said, why don't you go with Da? I said, no, I don't want to. I'm too big now, you know. And made that excuse. Anyway, I never went out anymore with him.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
You mentioned there about delivering things with a horse. That wasn't uncommon in those days, was it? Lots of deliveries were done with horse and cart.
The vegetable man used to come around, the baker, the milkman, the butcher, the grocer, everybody came around.
Kids used to love it too, didn't they?
Oh, yes. Mum would go to the grocer's and give her order and pay it. The grocer would deliver it with a big bag of lollies for us kids, The butcher would come around and you just get what you want off the butcher's cart. The baker, every day the baker came around with hot bread, fresh bread.
Yes.
So everything was like...
I got a few years to catch up on you yet, but I actually remember horse and cart deliveries as a young boy as well.
Yeah.
I remember the ice man used to come around and used to chip off bits of ice for the kids in the summer. It was great.
Yeah. These big blocks of ice.
That's right.
Put in the ice chest.
Yes, indeed.
That was a done thing.
So how long did you stay back with Mum after that journey back from Sydney? Did you stay with her for a long time?
Well, I stayed there during the war. I was the first female in Tasmania to get a bus licence. I drove a bus during the war.
What made you do that? Where did that come from?
I couldn't go to the war because I had big operations on my shoulder and they wouldn't take me in there.
Right.
So I thought, well, do something.
Right.
So I had, there was a lot of us young people like friends and these two brothers, their father had this bus, these buses. And I said, I'll drive on your father's buses. Alan said, I'll come up and see Dad. So I went and saw Dad. So Dad got me in. He had to lengthen the things for me.
Oh, because your feet wouldn't get to the pedals.
he had to solder an extra thing on for me. have you been to Hobart?
Oh, yes, I have.
Well, Bridgewater, you know Bridgewater?
Yes.
Well, the Army camp was a Bridgewater.
Oh, that's
lovely. Drive out every night to Bridgewater to the dances and take all the girls out. Get home about 1 o'clock in the morning. I'd have a bit of sleep, and then I had a big Mercury V8. I'd take visitors around in Port Arthur or golfing or whatever they wanted to sightsee in the daytime, back driving the bus in the nighttime.
So the owner of the bus didn't think it was unusual that you, a young woman, wanted to be a driver? What about the... You must have gone for a driver's licence for it. Did the police think it was unusual?
Oh, I didn't do anything. Huh? It took me up to Top Cricket Ground. Do you know where the Top Cricket Ground is in Hobart? Probably wouldn't know by the top. I don't know what they call it now. We called it Top Cricket Ground. You have to go up the hill. And had halfway up, he said, stop, turn your motor up. I turned the motor off. He got out and walked around. I didn't know what he was doing. He put a matchbox at the back of the wheel. I found out afterwards. He got back in. He said, all right, start off.
Wow.
So I went a bit. He said, stop. And he went out and looked. He brought it in. He said, see? I said, oh, a matchbox. He said, that was at the back of your wheel. And I said, how'd it get there? He said, I put it there.
One little roll back and you would have failed.
One roll back.
Wow. You must have been very skillful, because that's not easy to do.
No. I tell them, even Ellie, I said to Ellie, you've got your foot on your accelerator, you want your brake put on, you've got to work them both evenly. You don't go jerk. So if you've got your foot on the accelerator that way,
yes,
and your accelerator's there, you've got your foot on the accelerator, your brake's here, and you want to stop, but you've got to go slowly.
Yes, indeed.
If you go quickly, you put your engine out and blow it, stop it.
Yep.
You've got to go slowly.
So you had real control, didn't you?
Yeah, I was, because I'm not afraid of anything.
Funny about that, I've only known you about 20 minutes and that statement like that doesn't surprise me at all.
And we had to go around Hobart, know all the streets and everything. We're going up, not down in the bus, this was the Mercury, I was in there, going around Hobart. I said, come around that corner. I said, you can't go around that corner, no left turn. I said, it won't matter. I said, we'll matter, I'm not going around. So I went on up, came back and went round the other street where he wanted to go. Then we went down again and he said, I want to go up there. I said, I have to go down there and come back. He said, all right, keep on going.
He's not going to trick you. No, he's not going to pull it over you. You can so see that.
I got 10 shillings for a bus licence and 5 shillings for a private licence. I've still got my first ones.
Oh, wow. You must have had some characters on the bus at times.
Oh, yes.
Can you recall any stories from that period your bus as a bus driver?
Oh, the girls are pretty well behaved, though. They, a few of them occasionally just had a little bit of too much of the bendy knee or bone and get them onto the bus and go to sleep. Come on, whatever, get out. I want to get out. But you've got to get out. Come on, I'm going home. I'm trying to mount the bus.
Well, they were in excellent hands.
It was all right. It was good, you know.
Join Phyllis and I next week for more of her amazing story. Learn how she's come to be the oldest living elder of the Yarra tribe, and how rabbits led to her meeting her husband-to-be, Ted. And we learn about her life on the road, in a covered wagon, with Ted and a ferret and a dingo. All this and more next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.